Welcome to the Free Man's Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Whitmire. Join us as we explore liberty, truth, and current events from a biblical worldview. All right, Cam. So you gave a really good... joke from Ronald Reagan. I gotta say, yes, you actually delivered it pretty good.
Thanks. I had to add my own flair, you know, because yeah, I couldn't go for like the full on Ronald Reagan.
Oh, just of course
like the
not.
Full
course
distinguished
not.
Man.
I mean,
he is. You
Ronald
know?
Reagan's Ronald Reagan, and on top of that, he had a career in acting. So
yeah, he was good at that.
Yeah. So here's another one of his jokes about the communist regime, the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. So it was a story he told about there was this American and he was in a debate with a Russian citizen about whose country was better.
Okay.
And so the American...
I may have heard this one before,
have,
but it's
yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
So the American, he looks at the Russian and tells him, you know, my country's so great that I can walk into the Oval Office and I can pound my president's desk and I can say, Mr. President, I don't like the way you're running this country. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just got the power to go up and be able to talk to the leader of the free world and tell him how he feels.
Yeah.
The Soviet looks at him and says, oh, I can do that. And the American's like, you can? And the Soviet goes, yeah, I can go to the Kremlin, to the general secretary's office. I can pound his desk and say, Mr. General Secretary, I don't like the way President Reagan's running this country.
Yeah.
Oh man,
that's a classic one.
I love
that's so good
how you know he was in such a rough role, and mm-hmm. I praise God that the Lord raised Ronald Reagan up. At least you know there's you can
yeah,
say
not,
all the all, people can say all that they say.
Guy.
No, he's not perfect, but in the sense of raising him up, as he raises up all leaders, that he specifically used Reagan to influence the Soviet Union to bring about the collapse of the Soviet Union, right? Mm-hmm. And the collapse of that. And in the midst of that kind of intense situation, you know, with all the nuclear arms race and everything, mm-hmm. he's able to crack some jokes and get everybody to laugh. And I think it's important that, especially in our topic, this second episode on tyranny, mm-hmm. that we laugh some, because tyranny is not a laughable thing, but we need to keep enjoying liberty and laugh, and that's what we're all about in this in our podcast. So
for sure,
the last episode that we did, we define tyranny from Google. We talked about it from the ancient Athenians and the Spartans, and I really appreciate that. And like we kind of said, it's not that our countries are based on their systems of government, because they're not. Our founders specifically, like, we don't want that.
Yeah, 100%.
But a lot of their terminology carried over, and mm-hmm. one of them was tyranny, or was it tyrannos?
Yeah, tyrannos. It's like, it's a verb,
right,
which means the seizure of power.
Yeah, and so we looked at that, and then we looked at the founders in the sense of Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary. That mm-hmm. was a defining of tyranny from how they would have understood it when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, when they wrote the Constitution.
Yep.
And then we saw a lot of examples throughout the Bible, from Exodus all the way to Matthew in the time of Jesus, and the different tyrants, and how God raised up a deliverer in the mm-hmm. face of each one. And the ultimate deliverer, the last tyrant we looked at, was Herod II and mm-hmm. Pontius Pilate, and the ultimate deliverer right there with Jesus.
Yep. Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think we touched on this, mm-hmm. but correct me if I'm wrong, because you're more knowledgeable in these things than I am, but
I don't know about that.
The Declaration of Independence, within that, they mm-hmm. specifically used the word tyranny to describe King George's rule, correct?
You know, that is a excellent question, and
I shouldn't have thrown that on you.
Yeah,
Joel.
You didn't, but it's okay. I think it's something that is worth saying here. Mm-hmm. I want to say yes, that they did, but it's been a while since I've read that specific part, because mm-hmm. I usually focus on reading where they, in the beginning of it, where they talk about like the fundamentals of government and stuff, because the list of tyrannical actions, because mm-hmm. they use the terms like that the government of Great Britain is seeking to establish a total despotism,
right?
And so those are synonymous words with tyranny. Mm-hmm. But if they call King George a tyrant, I want to say yes, but mm-hmm. It's been a while since I've read that specific part of it. Okay. So,
well, again, we can either get into that or not get into that. Well, but
you're making me want to. Yeah. But I will say this for our listeners' sake, who mm-hmm. may be like, how does this guy know anything if he can't say that?
Yeah.
Calm down. We are going to be bringing episodes coming soon on the Declaration of Independence. And I can't wait for those. So mm-hmm. we can remember this bombshell of a question you just threw me and just lob that grenade over here. And yeah. we can bring that back up.
Just throw it right back.
Throw it right back when we get into those. So nice. Cool. Yeah. So just for our listeners who might be just now jumping in on this series, we define we were borrowing Noah Webster's definition of tyranny mm-hmm. as the one that we're going to go with, because I think it covers the bases. And this is how he defined tyranny. Tyranny is arbitrary or despotic exercise of power. The exercise of power over subjects and others with a rigor not authorized by law or justice, or not requisite for the purposes of government. Hence, tyranny is often synonymous with cruelty and oppression. Mm-hmm. And so, just a couple of things we talked about last time. Arbitrary power means it's this idea of exercising power without any founding in law.
Yeah,
like it's just the whims of whoever can make it to the top of the pile. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we even touched on, you know, kind of writ large in sort of the Athenian example mm-hmm. is how there are even instances where things might be produced out of an arbitrary tyranny that right. could be beneficial or yeah. that could satisfy some type of need or some type of, you know, kind of economic, you know, pressure point. Mm-hmm. But one of the aspects of tyranny is that it's always done kind of outside of the rule of law,
right?
Or it's outside of sort of the functioning of government.
Exactly. And right now, today, this episode, we're going to get into how almost every tyrant, especially in the modern world, is promising some kind of good, I'm going to use air quotes here, good benefit. Mm-hmm. But then in that, they're going to seize and put a chokehold on everything else.
Yep.
Right. And exactly. So you can't, if you're going to go with a tyrant, you're going to accept his good, then you're going to take everything else. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's better to just take what God says is good for you, take dominion, responsibility for your own actions, like we've talked about in mm-hmm. those other episodes, and liberty and self-government.
Yeah.
It's way better for you and for everyone else, because in my humble opinion, that's God's way.
Yep. But we'll get into that.
Yes, we will. So that leads us, and what we're going to start with, how does tyranny happen? Mm-hmm. Like just in general, how does this evil come about?
Yep. How is it possible? And what are sort of the characteristics so you can know? Like, I think it's helpful to know, like, if there's patterns to mm-hmm. these sort of things to know, to be able to identify it, to stop it yes. from happening again.
Yes.
So I'm excited to get into this.
It's not that, you know, there's that famous phrase, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily that that's always the case, because there are some nuances, but by and large, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yep.
So you can, like you're saying, you can watch patterns. It's not going to play out the same way every time.
Yep.
You know, we're not going to have hyperinflation after a world war necessarily. Well, maybe we would, but may God forbid.
Yeah, who knows?
But and then that lead to the rise of a strong man like Hitler, you know?
Yep.
It's not going to play out the exact same way, but you can see patterns.
Yep.
Pay attention to those patterns, because that's when you're able to go, wait. We've been down this road as humanity and we don't need to go there again. Well.
Right, yep, right. Exactly. 100%.
So first thing I put down here, that how tyranny happens. And we kind of touched on this a little bit in the last episode.
Yeah.
But I believe that all tyranny ultimately is sourced in the rejection of God. And it's when people reject God's ways and God's standards as laid out in the scripture, those ultimate fundamental truths. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's the principles. It's not necessarily so much the hard and fast rules as it is the principles. And as one of my brothers actually earlier today, he said something along the lines of like the God ordained creation mandatedness of these rights and wrongs, right? Hmm. So it goes beyond just the law of Sinai. It's the way God created everything. And talking to him, I was like, yeah, natural law. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the way our founders would have understood natural laws, mm-hmm. God's intention, his will portrayed in how he's established it. So tyranny ultimately comes from when God is rejected and his ways and standards are rejected by the people. And then God allows tyrants as corrections and or judgments. And that's a scary place to be. Mm-hmm. But he does it, and this might sound contradictory, but he does it from a heart of love for his people to draw them back to him, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes it's not a correction or a judgment that tyrants come in. Sometimes he allows the tyrant to show up on the scene because he's going to show his power. In Romans 8, we get that where he tells, it's a quotation from Exodus, which we touched on last time,
yep.
but where he tells Pharaoh, I raised you up for this purpose that I may show my power and my name may be exalted throughout the earth.
Yeah.
And which is interesting because almost any culture in the world, if you ask them about the Hebrew God, they're almost always going to know about the story of the crossing of the Red Sea, mm-hmm. which is crazy, yep. right? So God can use tyrants as correction and judgments or to show his power as being sovereign over all situations. Mm-hmm. So a tyrant or group of tyrants are those that usurp God's authority and want to be God. And it really is pure evil. But that's what I wanted to like show is like a tyrant is somebody who is usurping an authority that doesn't belong to him. Mm-hmm. And like we said, that tyranny is he then uses arbitrary power. It's power without law or justice.
Yeah.
And so God can allow this, but he never looks on it with favor and says, yeah, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. He's always against the tyrant because tyrants are trying to usurp either an authority that he gave to individuals or even seeking to usurp God's authority. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So, Romans 1, 22 through 25, this was something that we kind of wanted to look at because as you reject God, mm-hmm. you get what you want. And I think you were going to read this one for us today.
Yeah, I think this is just a really cool kind of passage where really this sort of encompasses just sort of like the human condition, right? And just mm-hmm. like the human rejection of God in general. But it illustrates like your point about like tyranny and the rise of a tyrant ultimately comes from that person, the tyrant's rejection of God. But also just people, right? Even the like people that the tyrant rules over. So this is Romans chapter 1, verses 22 through 25, and it says in verse 20 through 22, claiming to be wise, they became fools, they meaning the peoples.
Yeah. Mankind.
And exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lust of their heart to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, mm-hmm. because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator who is blessed forever. Amen. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think one, it just sums up sort of this inner working that happens in us. And that's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing, right? I read that and I'm kind of like, that's kind of what I did.
Yeah.
But
it's the sin nature, right? Like this passage fundamentally, obviously is not talking about tyrants mm-hmm. or tyranny, except the tyranny of sin.
Yep.
That we willingly submit ourselves to because we think it's going to fulfill something. We're promising something that we think that is better than God.
Exactly.
And so when we reject God, well, you have play out what we just saw, mm-hmm. right? We have this where we become foolish. We become where God gives us over to these things because it's what we wanted, mm-hmm. right? And God, and it's not saying that God has given them over to a complete giving over that he can't save them from, but mm-hmm. this is the condition of mankind as they reject God, as societies reject God, mm-hmm. well, his judgment is to turn them over and it gets worse. And then that's usually when a tyrant comes in after that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I mean, that's just, you know, one of the sort of historical things that you find, like the more you research some of these extreme examples of tyranny, I've done, you know, a decent amount of research studying Nazi Germany, you know, communist Russia, things like that, extreme examples of tyranny. And one of the things that you sort of find and that we've researched over time is how, like, just how like pernicious these ideologies were, like, not just from the top down, but through all of society.
Yeah.
And so you kind of really get this this picture that, like, there has to be a lot of, you know, like, complicit acts that take place within all of, like, layers of society in order for, like, a tyrant to come into power.
Right.
You know, I think Jordan Peterson puts it really well that, like, in those type of states, like, everyone has to believe in a lie for it to happen. And we'll kind of get into this more.
I'm glad you brought that up, because but, like,
I think that's such a good way to put it, you know.
Well, that's exactly what, when we give into sin, right, when we give into it, it's in, let's say we give into a strong man, right? Right. A strong man is not ruling us, a lie is. And that's what Jordan Peterson was getting. I heard him say that recently. I thought that was a really good point, because that lines up with scripture. Like, it's a lie that we're buying into. And it's saying here, we exchange the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie. That's, man. What a dark thing. And God's judgment rightly comes against the ungodliness of mankind in these situations. But not to be all doom and gloom, if you keep reading Romans, which I encourage our listeners to, there is salvation in Jesus Christ.
Yeah, for sure.
So Benjamin Franklin had this, at least I think this was attributed to him, and I'm going to have to paraphrase it, but he said something along the lines of, men must govern themselves, and I'm going to put a little caveat, aka must submit to God, or going back to Franklin, or by God they will be governed. Right? So you either submit to God's ways, follow the truth, abide by the truth, or God will have you governed. Right? See, when we get turned over to ourselves and we get into full anarchy like that and destroying each other, God sends a strong man in sometimes as a mercy to bring order back to the chaos. I say sometimes because Hitler's not one of those examples. Stalin's not. But there are other men throughout history who put an end to the bloodshed, right? So choose. Like, choose today.
And which would you rather have, right? You know, because would you rather have the ability to govern yourself, or would you rather be governed by someone? You know, we mentioned earlier the idea of, like, monarchy, right? And it's like, sometimes there can be benevolent monarchs, you know, who do things really well.
There can be constitutional monarchies.
Personally, I would rather live in some type of self-government republic, you know, where I'm not governed by someone, but sometimes there can be good ones.
Right. So, but getting back to it, you know, this is fundamentally how tyranny happens, but how does it practically happen? And we had kind of put a note together about that. And tyrants come, they come into the situation either because of chaos, they usually come in promising to fix the issues, or they are a collectivist ideology that seeks to gain power in order to implement their views on the world. Almost always as a rejection of God's ways. So it's like taking the situation that's bad, usually from rejection of God's ways, and compounding it, making it worse. You know, or tyrants can come in by conquering a country or group of people, you know. I think of, like, Napoleon or Hitler when he conquered Poland. Or France and all those other countries, you know, they just come in and conquer and then rule because they have the power to do so. Like we got into with the ancients, they can, they hold on to power through military. Right. And so tyranny is not only a tyrant wanting to force his idea of existence on others, though. right? So it's not only what we just talked about, but it is also, it also comes about, tyrants can also come into power because entire cultures, A, are in agreement with the tyrant, or B, the entire culture is passive enough to comply,
mm-hmm.
which is so just so heartbreaking when you see that.
Yeah.
Because all it takes is people to say no. That's mm-hmm. all it takes, is to not give in to the lie.
Yeah.
And C, the entire population want what the tyrant is promising, and they are willing to compromise what they believe to be right to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So,
or at least, I would probably caveat that mm-hmm. with a majority of the population.
Sure.
Right. There has to be a loud enough that. Majority.
I did say entire, but you're right. Yeah. I think it's enough of the majority, like you're mm-hmm. saying, loud enough.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, like the best example is like in the Bolsheviks, you know, like mm-hmm. the word Bolshevik means majority. Do what?
I said, watch your mouth.
Watch your mouth. It means majority.
Oh, wow.
And they were running against the Menshevik party, which Menshevik means minority in Russian.
Wow.
But the Menshevik party started, they called themselves that to be like a minority against like the imperial, like the czarist government.
Okay.
Right. So they're like, we're the minority. Like, we're cool. Yeah. And then Lenin is like, you know, it'd be really smart. Why don't we just call ourselves the majority? Mm. And that's where the word Bolshevik comes from. But there was actually less Bolsheviks than there were Mensheviks.
Okay. So is like Bolsheviks, you can kind of caveat here, but yeah. you know, ties in. Was that the Red Army? And then the White Army was the Mensheviks? Or is it mixing? Is that something completely different?
Like most historical questions, it's complicated.
Oh,
so that it develops days. Over time.
Okay.
Because like, so originally the Mensheviks, because the Mensheviks are like socialist, like it's a socialist party.
Gotcha.
It's a left party. The Bolsheviks are like the Mensheviks are like radical leftists, and the Bolsheviks are like radical leftists.
Okay. Yeah,
so
I can see that.
The Red Army, it's at first is kind of mixed of like Mensheviks, Bolsheviks, like okay. all of these sort of left parties against the whites, which are like the Western backed, mostly czarist, nationalist.
Okay.
That's a big group. But again, it kind of depends and it kind of oscillates, right? Because people are starting to like, they're trying to figure out who the winning side is.
Okay.
And you have more moderate Mensheviks, you know, or leftists who are kind of like, well, I believe in this, but I don't know if I believe in this like all the way. And so they end up fighting for the White Army. So it kind of
complicated. Well, I think that's a pointed point here. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're talking about how these tyrants come to power. You know, it's either through promising to fix issues or ideology, or it's by the populace complying. They're in agreement with the tyrant, though they might not be completely, mm-hmm. you know, there might be some things they're like, yeah, I like that, but what is he doing here?
Right.
So, or they're willing to compromise.
Mm-hmm. And in the case of the Russians, right. they were stuck between two tyrants. So
no, you're right.
That's
heartbreaking situation. And, but you gotta, I thought that was a good point. Like mm-hmm. you said, it's complicated. Like what we're trying to do here is clear some of that complication up
right.
when it comes to tyranny. That way us as the audience, people listening, the people of America, we don't get caught in between two tyrants mm-hmm. and left with that kind of choice, but we can see, there's a third choice, and that choice is, I don't know, us?
Yeah.
God's ways,
right? Yeah, and then my original point in that was like to just illustrate how like the Bolsheviks were more of like a really loud minority.
Sure.
And so, but they were a demanding enough loud minority.
Right.
That they got enough influence to sort of like be able to do what they did.
Man, I can't imagine where that's happening again.
Yeah. So that was my original kind of point, was just to like illustrate that.
No, that's a good point. I appreciate it.
But what you said was really good as well. So,
just going on from there, we had that tyrants, they usually, I think there are three, might be more, but just some different ways we've seen them throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had culture and social chaos caused by men wanting to implement their, again, air quotes, enlightenment ideals
mm-hmm.
in the French Revolution, which led to the Reign of Terror and just the crazy bloodbath and destruction of so many innocent lives mm-hmm. just because they were enemies of the state. And then, lo and behold,
air quotes.
Yeah.
Enemies of the state.
Lo and behold, Napoleon steps onto the screen, a strong man,
mm-hmm.
you know, he might be the least bad of the strongmen that we might talk about today, mm-hmm. but he still was a tyrant. He yeah. really was.
Yeah. No, I love, we went and saw the Napoleon movie recently when it came out. And like, it's just like, the movie illustrated the one, I think the one of the best things it illustrated was the movie opens with the beheading of Marie Antoinette.
Uh-huh.
Right. Like, so the, you know, execution of the monarchy.
Right.
Right. And then the French were like, so you know what we'll replace the monarchy with eventually? An emperor,
right?
You know, it's like, that's a great idea. We'll give them even more power than we had originally. So, which the movie showed all sort of the inner workings of the politics of that. Right. But it's just kind of like...
some enlightenment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, you really enlightened back 1700 years.
Yeah, right? Seriously, though, you know? Seriously. So yeah, that's one of those things that cultural and social chaos is usually what can be stirred up that then a strong man comes in and promises to fix it, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Then you have economic issues.
Yep.
I put in a note here, like rejecting a just weight and measure, like Proverbs talks about.
Mm.
That is like a just way for the economy to run for everyone. So the rejecting of a just weight and measure, rejecting a solid basis for a monetary system. You know, they devalue the currency.
Mm-hmm.
The Romans did this several times, and then sometimes a Roman emperor would come in and fix it, so they went on a little longer, mm-hmm. but it keeps happening. So when you have that kind of economic issue, you have somebody come in and go, oh, I'll fix it. You know, promises to fix the economy, promises economic prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make sure I stress here, there's nothing wrong with somebody being elected to fix an actual broke economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's those that come in with a lot of charisma to stir up mm-hmm. the population against scapegoats of any kind.
Yep.
And then they're promised to fix and give untold wealth and riches to the people. Like, those are the types of people you got to look out for, because at the end of World War One, you know, Germany's currency completely collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
Hyperinflation, like it went, like I think it was a matter of days, if not hours. I don't remember the exact time frame, that you went from having to do like thousands of German marks
mm-hmm.
to millions to billions to end up $1 trillion marks.
Mm-hmm.
And it went so fast that the printers ran out of paper and they had to print on like wood and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you have,
it was so bad, like in the interwar period, like it basically, mm-hmm. like money became like arbitrary. Like
it ceased to
have any value, well, like any meaning.
I'm going to correct you for a second, not to get too much in it.
Oh.
Not money, currency.
Yeah.
Currency is not backed by something.
Yeah.
Money is a storehouse of value. But anyways.
We know how this guy feels about the gold standard.
Too many caveats to go into
the Federal Reserve.
Oh, please don't do that to me on this tyranny. So end of World War One.
Yep.
Rise of Hitler, promises to fix the economic issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got that going.
Yep.
And then another way that you can see that they've come into power throughout history is through the rise of national socialism, which was the Nazis,
mm-hmm.
and the Bolshevik Revolution.
The communists. Russian communists.
Or just any other collectivist ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, we're seeing the rise of that in our world today with cultural Marxism, these collectivist ideologies. So be aware that these things have happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And these two we just mentioned and the new ones that we're facing today, they're all arising out of legitimate calamity and economic strife, right?
Yeah.
There are legitimate issues. There are legitimate social issues in every one of these situations.
Yep.
But as either as a rejection of good, solid standards, biblical principles and stuff, or just a complacency among the people, you know, these tyrants come in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not on your guard, they're going to seize power. And good grief, Hitler got to power by one vote, people. So, like, pay attention.
Yeah.
Right? So... that brings us to I put this here in our notes, the road to serfdom. Mm-hmm. I think we've been talking about the road to serfdom this whole time.
Yeah, we have. We've kind of been dancing around it, but yeah. What it was, so you want to talk about this, sort of the steps to serfdom in the book, The Road to Serfdom. So what is that book? Who wrote it? And
yeah, so The Road to Serfdom is a book by economist Friedrich Hayek. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say economist. I'm like, well, he's kind of like a cultural critic mm-hmm. who loved liberty, hated the Nazism and, you know, communism. And he lived in Austria mm-hmm. in the 1930s. I think it was the 1930s. He got out, moved, was a refugee in England, and watching what was going on, he wrote the book, The Road to Serfdom.
Sure.
And just explaining how he saw, you know, the different steps that led to the rise of the tyrants. And so, specifically addressing like collectivist ideologies, mm-hmm. He came up and he said, you know, they come in and they promise freedom. Mm-hmm. You got to be careful because they've hijacked your term for freedom, mm-hmm. right? So they're not saying freedom of choice. They're saying, oh, we're going to give you freedom from economic necessity. Mm. We're going to give you freedom from want and need. You know, we're going to fix the economy. It's not bad to fix an economy, but it's wrong to say that we're going to take out any need. That's mm-hmm. impossible. So don't listen to fairy tale people who have these grandiose, if that's how you say that.
Grandiose.
Yeah. Okay, getting fancy over here. You have these grandiose, I can't say that
you said
laughing.
It was funny as you said it even more grandiose the second time.
I know, it's like every time
you
I
were
say
like,
it's like.
Grandiose, and then you're like, grandiose. And then grandiose.
Anyways, like. They promise these grandiose, I can't do it. These grandiose promises of like untold economic wealth and riches. Mm-hmm. That's not gonna happen.
Right.
And you don't want that from somebody.
Or like an absolutist definition, right? It's not like we're not gonna bring you economic prosperity or we're not gonna stimulate the economy. It's like it's promising like absolute freedom.
Yeah,
from you know, like needing, we're going to release you from this need.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yep. Thank you for that. Yeah. So they come in and promise freedom from economic need, and then they have this socialistic promise. This type of socialistic promise again is a freedom from need, not a liberty of choice. Mm-hmm. Right.
So when you say choice, or when he says choice. What is that mean? Like, is that strictly basically like freedom? Like, is that choice free market economy?
So, yeah,
or is it like
he's referring to choice in a broad free markets, term? Right? Free mm-hmm. markets in the sense of you get to decide what you're going to eat, you get to decide where you're going to work, you mm-hmm. get to decide what you're going to put your time and energy to, where you're going to work, if you're going to own your own business, you get to decide. And he broadens it to really be your choice of almost anything because he shows that these collectivist ideologies, though they're promising economic fix, it's always going to lead to a control over everything.
Yeah.
Because the economy is fundamentally the one of the main ways we choose, right? Mm. And so, in the name of this freedom, they then want... These people who are promising this freedom, they then want to plan the economy, and by default, they're going to plan everything else.
Yeah,
because you can't just say, "Oh, we're just going to do the economy," without everything else. Because Think about everything the economy touches.
Yeah, right? The economy is everything else.
Right.
Basically,
like you could say, "Well, I won't be in the job market." You know, the economy is what we mm-hmm. usually think of as working jobs and factories or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go be a farmer. Well, that's part of the economy too.
Yep,
and the Soviets destroyed farming.
Intentionally or semi-intentionally.
So after they want to plan the economy, they then require the people to, all right, so you want this promise we're giving you? Mm-hmm. Cool. Give us the power, unlimited, in order to allow us to achieve this promised goal of freedom from need, mm-hmm. right? And then that goes into that they have to build a whole system of collectivist morals and rules that the entire society must subscribe to. because
this is kind of like the lie, basically. That's the big part of the lie that we were talking about earlier. Well,
the first part is that they can give you freedom from need. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a growing lie.
Yeah.
But yeah, this entire system of collectivist morals and rules that says whatever the state and plan is good and everything else is bad. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and if you don't go along, you don't subscribe, then you're out. And by out, they weren't exiling people. They were disappearing people, mm-hmm. right?
They were unaliving people.
Unaliving people.
Isn't that what Gen Z says?
Yeah. Do they really?
Unaliving, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's a whole thing. We don't have to get please into that don't. To right now. I can explain it, but.
Yeah. So this then leads that the required power always ends up in the hands of just a few or even one. Mm-hmm. Always happens. And it always ends in despotism and tyranny. And Friedrich Hayek makes the point that this will always attract the worst people into those positions. Yeah. You know, the Hitlers, the Stalins, the brutes, the bullies mm-hmm. who, I want the power to have people do whatever I want. You know, it always gets them at the top. Mm-hmm. And as Hayek says, this puts us on the road to serfdom. Mm. Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it's a fair point because when you create a system that encourages sort of, in a sense, radicalism, mm-hmm. you know, that it promotes, like in communist Russia, extreme devotion to the party, right, the communist party, then you're naturally going to have like the truest believers will be in the people who kind of rise to the top, you know, or at least the truest believers in the sense that how much do they believe that they're the truest believer?
Right.
Even if they don't, you know, I mean, Stalin and Lenin didn't view everything the same way.
No, not at all.
But Stalin was able to consolidate power because he was the most, you know, sort of true believer in his own sense. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's, I don't know, I think Hayek is right on in saying that. So that's good stuff.
I highly encourage people to read Hayek's book, The Road mm-hmm. to Serfdom. Like, you really, it'll help explain some very good economic principles, but also explain, again, everything we're talking about today. Like, mm-hmm. how do these things happen and why are they happening, you know?
Yeah.
So, cool. Yeah. So we've kind of already touched on several examples throughout history, mm-hmm. but I think you wanted to like touch on the Nazis for a minute here. Mm-hmm. And I think that'd be a good idea to like really draw out this evil empire in this example. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, like you touched on the fact that Hayek is writing about, you know, he's basically writing about the 20th century.
Right.
You know, and so he's creating like this almost, it's like this historical theory for how to like look at these events and explain mm-hmm. like this is why they happened because of all these things. And so, kind of, you see everything that he says, all of the steps in the example, like of Nazi Germany specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, the National Socialist Party is birthed out of this time of political and economic and social turmoil after the First World War. You know, Germany is put under a understandably kind of insane debt in the Treaty of Versailles that they were supposed to pay back to the Western nations, and it just kind of completely crippled their economy. Mm-hmm. So the whole National Socialist vision was this idea to restore Germany to, you know, its former glory before it had lost the First World War, and kind of restore it to this, you know, kind of its place as a world power, which is not exactly a great interpretation of German history because it was only like just became a world power after the First World War. But anyways,
mm-hmm. Right.
So that's sort of the promise, right? You know, like Hayek talked about this idea of like, you have people who are in legitimate time of like strife and sort of like economic uncertainty, and the National Socialists and Hitler kind of come in as like, they promise this like freedom and solution to that.
Yep.
And then in order to do that, he talked about how they have to sort of like, you know, gain unadulterated power to do so. And that's what Hitler does. You know, he becomes Reich Chancellor in 1933. Mm. And then through a set of political maneuvers, one being the Reichstag fire, which is where basically the National Socialist they sort of created this ruse where they lit the Reichstag, which is like the center of the German government, mm-hmm. on fire.
It's like the U.S. Capitol.
Right. It'd be like the U.S. Capitol building being set on fire. And then they posed it as if it was this group of communists who set it on fire and who were planning sort of this governmental coup to take over and establish a communist government. So then basically Hitler comes in and says that, like, I need to be given like full power as the Führer. Right. Basically what he's doing is like he consolidates both branches of the government is the idea.
Wow. Okay.
And so into himself. And so he has ultimate authority. And so he sort of, you have this basic of like economic uncertainty in like where the whole country is at, although it was getting better at the end of the Weimar Republic. But, mm-hmm. and then they create like an artificial calamity.
Right.
In order to create the conditions mm-hmm. for him to consolidate power to sort of solve these problems, so to speak. Then it sort of progresses on. You have this thing called the Night of the Long Knives, amongst other sort of like, big moments in mm-hmm. sort of their gaining of power. But Night of the Long Knives is June 30th through July 2nd, 1934. Basically, the National Socialist Party.
The Nazis.
Yep. And the SD, which is like the security division of mm-hmm. SD, and then the SS, the two security divisions, they basically go through and start doing arrests and murders of thousands of political adversaries.
Man.
So communist, kind of traditional nationalist.
Conservatives,
Weimar Republic people. Mm-hmm. And that's just sort of another step in this process of like consolidating totalitarian power because they're eliminating their people, not just like staying in power based off of their own merit.
Right.
It's
easy to stay in power. No one objects.
When no one objects. Exactly.
Or the objectors are gone.
Yep.
Right.
So, again, if you were to go through like Hayek's steps of mm-hmm. the road to serfdom, like you can kind of everything I just said, like you just start checking off all the boxes. Yeah. Like, yep, they did that. Yep, they did that. It was based on this, like, the whole thing. And so then the kind of next part to transition to it would be like Hayek's part where he says that they build a whole system of collectivist morals and rules that the entire society must subscribe to.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what we'd put as the next part. And I don't mean to sort of dominate this.
No. I asked you to talk about it. Yeah, this is good because this is giving the example that we need. It's not just, mm-hmm. we're not just talking about ideas, but this has happened.
Right.
And it can happen again.
Yes. And, sort of one of the things I think that's fascinated people with like Nazi Germany specifically, right, is it was like supposedly like a Western power, mm-hmm. Built upon sort of like quote unquote, like, Judeo-Christian principles and history, although like Hitler did his absolute best to remove the Judeo side of that. Yep. But Hitler gets up in his inauguration speech and, his first kind of opening line is that he's like, I appeal to the God of our collective morality and, our history.
Man.
And so there was sort of this religious ruse that the Nazis put on that they were this sort of Christian nation.
Yeah.
But I think that was really shocking to people in the aftermath because there were a lot of Westerners like British and even Americans that sort of believed that like Germany was this bulwark of sort of like traditional Christian society.
Yeah, you think about it. It had a national church with a Lutheran church, mm-hmm. Is this Protestant nation that had produced a lot of amazing theologians throughout history. Mm-hmm. And
birth of the Reformation.
Exactly. So you have that mentality. And again, before the Nazis, that's one of the things you know Germany for, mm-hmm. right? After the Nazis, you can't even imagine it being that anymore.
Right.
Right? Like you have to do a lot of mental exercise to go, okay, before Nazis, not so bad, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
With Nazis, evil. After Nazis, like what on earth happened, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
They're kind of like in the perfect example too, going back to like the collectivization of cultural and social institutions, mm-hmm. Nazi Germany is like a special example because they always kind of had a state church. They had for like centuries, mm-hmm. but under the Nazi rule, they try to collectivize the church into a new, like Reich church is what they call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
There's a group of Christians called the German Christians that are supposed to be sort of the head of these things. And there's a whole like sort of struggle and debate within the church community. We've talked about that some past podcast episodes, but marriage. So, you know, within not just Nazi Germany, but all of these collectivist societies, including communist Russia, marriage becomes sort of like this state-sponsored, ideologically driven component mm-hmm. of the whole beast.
Yeah. right. Yeah.
For the best example I always tell people is in Nazi Germany, you know, when you were married, when you got married as a young couple, you were given a copy of the Bible and you were given a copy of Mein Kampf.
Jesus and
yeah,
that should tell you everything you need to know. Is man
right?
It becomes a different religion.
It does, and you know the whole purpose of that was like you know it's we're gonna fully integrate this ideology into a society, mm-hmm. every aspect of it that you could. You know, both Nazi and communist Russia both had these laws like that promoted like. The births of like more children. I've told you about that before. Collectivist morals, right? Yep. Like, so, you know, in communist Russia, you would get like a medal if you like birthed, if you're a woman that birthed so many children.
Wow.
You know, and so it's like in our brains, we think like, oh yeah, have kids. That's yeah, good.
It's a good thing. It's a blessing from God.
Right? Yeah.
But when it's for the purposes of the state and under the state's mm-hmm. supervision and like when the state becomes God mm-hmm. to do that, mm-mm, no, right. Thank you.
Right. And so it just goes further because you have, we just talked about the church, we talked about marriage, you have the entire school system. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a really fascinating and gut-wrenching source that you can look up. And it's like basically a biology textbook that was written for middle school girls mm-hmm. in Nazi Germany. Joel's looking at me like, why are you talking about this?
Yeah, like, it's already like, I can only imagine where that's going.
Yeah. But in that, amongst other things, you know, they reinforce like to those little girls that like their responsibility is to like produce children for the Reich.
Man, not the glory of God, not the enjoyment of life mm-hmm.
For the Reich, that's important. And then I need to make sure that I mention and for the preservation of the German race, the Aryan race.
Man, I'm just going to say this and probably say it again and again. Yeah. Them Nazis is evil.
Yeah.
And it's so evil because it's taking good things mm-hmm. and twisting them.
And perverting it.
And perverting them, changing their purpose for something else. And I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, it gets integrated into every aspect of life.
Right. And you know, that's kind of what we saw with Hayek. He's like, mm-hmm. they have to have this collectivist idea of morals mm-hmm. and rules for the entire society.
Right.
Because if you don't, you lose power.
Yep, exactly. And then, I mean, it even gets to, like, the more, like, less intense examples would be, like, you know, collectivization of the arts, right? So, like, Soviet Russia, you know, Stalin produces a bunch of paintings. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You also have the press, right? You have the collectivization of the press. There's a official state-sponsored newspaper, state-sponsored films. You know, the only films you can see are Soviet-approved films.
Right, right.
You know, even something like Nazi Germany's the Olympics. You know, they have the Berlin Olympics in what year? I can't remember.
Oh, 1930s? Gosh. 36 or 38, maybe?
I think it's 37? 36.
Okay.
But, you know, and there's this whole sort of propaganda thing that's produced out of that, sort
right,
of like
right.
equating the Olympics and Nazi Germany, the Nazi ideal, all this kind of stuff, the Aryan race. So not to apologize for my long
No, it's tirade. All good. It's all good. I wanted to talk about this stuff because, again, it's not just talking about ideas here. These mm-hmm. things have happened. Yeah. Like, I just want to stress that over and over again. We don't have many people left who fought the Nazis. Mm-hmm. like they're
or who suffered under them,
or who suffered under them. Right. We don't have many left of that generation. And any time throughout history, a generation who went through something insanely difficult like World War II, once they die out, oh, you better look out, because if you don't hold on to the reality of what happened, then you're bound to forget and you're bound to walk right back into it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's one of the biggest things that Holocaust historians right now are the most concerned with, because there's only a handful of survivors left. Right. And so there's a big sort of concern within that community of like, how do you make this like real to people? Yeah. Because it's a lot easier when you meet someone like as someone who's met a Holocaust survivor.
Wow.
Like you never forget that experience because like you see someone, you like see the number tattooed on their arm becomes like a visceral experience of like you see someone who is like this sufferer under oppression, which we haven't gotten there yet.
No.
But we're basically there. So
I was going to say, I think we're covering oppression quite well.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. And I think that the phrase should take a deeper root into our gut. Never again.
Yeah.
Not just never again to the Holocaust. May God forbid that from ever happening again, but never again to this kind of tyranny.
Yeah.
Like never again, let this happen. Right?
Yeah.
So that brings us to our next
after
part.
After all that.
Yeah, after all that.
Cheery, wonderful.
How is it happening today? Mm-hmm. Is it happening today? And I believe it is. And I think it's happening in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Like tyranny is on the rise. I'm not saying Nazism on the rise. I'm not saying Sovietism is on the rise. But tyranny is on the rise.
Sure. And I think one of the biggest things is like, the byproducts of tyranny, like of the oppression, is not there yet.
Right.
Like we live relatively very cushy lives.
When I say on the rise, and I appreciate you saying
let's
that.
Make sure we define that.
I'm saying like the groundworks and the seeds are being planted that if you're not careful, if we're not careful as a society, we can walk. I say we can because it doesn't have to happen.
Yep.
But we could walk back into a situation and may God forbid it. So, how is it happening? What are some of the new promises that are being made by, you know, collectivist ideologies out there? Well, fix the environment. Fix the economy. And again, not wrong with doing any of those. Fixing COVID. Not wrong with fixing COVID. But how?
Yeah.
Are you promising?
Who is fixing?
Who's fixing? Are you promising unachievable things? Are you promising ultimate absolute things, or are you promising, or are you saying, hey, let's us as a people put a just weight and measure, let's get a good standard, a monetary system that is good and just for everyone? Is that your fix to the economy? Is your fix to the environment like, hey, let's go back to the principles of being a good steward of our dominion over the earth, and what does that look like? Or fixing COVID, hey, let's hear some truth about this and stop bending it left and right, backwards and forward all the time on us, that we can't trust what you're saying.
To fit your political agenda
and your agenda goals. To have power, right? So all these types of things, some of these promises, it's not that these things aren't real issues, but be so careful who you're listening to fix these things, right?
Sure.
So another thing that's being done, another seed of tyranny that we got to watch out for, is something called public-private partnerships. And this is the idea that government offers grants and subsidies and or contracts to those companies. So they're going through private companies. So they'll offer these grants, these subsidies or contracts to those companies that will conform to the standards and agendas set by who's ever in a bureaucracy. And if those companies will not conform or comply, then they don't get the subsidies, they don't get the contracts, they don't get these grants. So this is how the government, and specifically leftists, because the long march through the institutions that the cultural Marxists said needed to happen is happening. And you have a lot of leftist ideologies in our bureaucracy, the administrative state. So they're the ones pushing, hey, what the agenda is. Like if you'll agree with our agenda for, I don't know, promoting transgenderism and these types of things, promoting abortion, if you'll promote these leftist ideologies, oh, we'll give you the contract, we'll give you the subsidies, we'll give you the grants, right? So that's what it's, oh, nobody, laws won't do it because people are going to freak out about laws. But if we just get them to agree to this, you know, it's this underhanded, I'll call it bribery, that these administrative agencies are getting leftist ideologies into all the systems, especially education, by means of you don't get the contract, you don't get the grant, you don't get the subsidy unless you agree with this.
Yeah. I mean, money talks oftentimes a lot more than policy does.
Yeah.
And so if you have a government who is able to utilize that as a tool of influence,
right,
it's probably something that you should consider whether or not that's okay.
Right. And so be watching out for public-private partnerships. And do research. I've looked at some companies I thought about working for, found out that they were all into this, and I was like, I'm not going to go work for that company.
That's good to know.
That's my conviction, though. Yeah. You got to do what you got to do for your family.
Yeah.
Right? But seriously, pay attention to where these lines are, what's going on behind the scenes, because honestly, public-private partnerships, that's fascism. By its definition. I'm not trying to be throw scare tactics or anything like that out there, but if you look at the hardcore what fascism is, by just the definition, it's just it's the same thing under a different name.
Right. It's like the collectivization of commerce and trade and stuff like that.
Oh, you can own your own business, but you're gonna do what we say.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
So another way we're seeing tyranny on the rise right now is in the cancel culture. So we've said this a couple of times already, but this goes back to Hayek's step that collectivists must have rules and morals for the entire society that they all have to abide by. Because if you don't agree, then you get canceled or lose your freedom of speech, get deplatformed, get demonetized, I think is the word, the phrase.
It is.
Et cetera. You name it. So you are free to speak in this type of culture as long as it's what the powers that be want to hear.
Yeah. Now, do you think that this is like something that we see that is sort of like institutional with the specific example of cancel culture? Do you think that's like a byproduct of institutional tyranny, or do you think that's just more sort of like the preeminence of like social Marxism, like the idea that we need to like socially like what's the right word? Sort of like condition people.
Yeah.
Like a social conditioning, or do you think it's like actual institutional? Like,
I don't think it's institutional, right? This is not like public-private partnerships, though it might be played in there, but by and large, cancel culture is coming from these ideologies, culture Marxism, collectivist ideologies that are the loudest minorities. Oh, we're offended, or you know, we don't like that, or hey, Google, you need to, or YouTube, you need to deplatform them, or or whatever it is, you know,
right?
Whatever it is. So yeah, I don't think it's like institutional in the sense of like the public-private partnerships, though. I think that's used in that. I think this is more of just in general the ideologies that are out there that are trying to get traction and are have been successful, honestly.
Sure.
So the last two things we wanted to look at that how this is happening in is wokeism. And that is a social Marxism with inclusiveness is one of their main tenets. And this is not like inclusiveness of just everything, just everybody, you know, right?
It's everybody that they feel like including.
Right. And it's usually including anything that and everything that has honestly traditionally been seen as bad or wrong. It's almost like they just, how far can they go with going against what is traditionally be seen as the right way, the good way, you know? And then the other part of that is equity, but this is not a biblical idea of equity, of equal treatment under the law, but this is rather equal outcomes. So also known as everything that, wokeism is also known as everything that is leftist ideologies, right?
tends to be more far leftist ideology.
Far leftist, right? Yes. So, and this is just more of that moral rules of the new collectivist totalitarian. Mm-hmm. And finally, the last part here, and yeah, this part, the bureaucracy, right? The administrative state is made up of unelected officials who have the power to make rules and regulations that have the force and power of law. That if the people break these rules and regulations, then they can be fined or jailed. And I think that our founders would have rolled in their graves at the idea of this. Mm. And I want to make a point here. There are things that are good, and I would even say line up with biblical things that the administrative state could potentially fulfill, right? The protecting of food, the FDA in yeah. some things, you know, protecting children from food, applesauce poisoned with lead, which yeah. is something recent that's happened. Mm. Great.
All right. Makes sense.
Makes sense. My thing is, if we want that as a people, mm-hmm. make a constitutional amendment to allow an office like that, and then give Congress, our representatives, absolute control over it. I say absolute control over it in the sense of
right, lawful, they have the power to control. Right, legislate right. to determine
if there's a new regulation, if there's a new thing coming out, got to go through Congress, right?
That makes sense.
So
I'd be for it.
Right. So it's not that an administrative their administrative things can't be good for us. Mm-hmm. That we might all agree, yeah, that's a good idea. But let's all agree about it lawfully so we have the rule of law and not the rule of unelected officials that now rule without our consent.
Yeah.
Right?
Cool. Well, I was going to ask for an example of the bureaucracy, but then you said the FDA, and I was like, okay, cool. That works.
A three-letter agency.
Yep.
Right?
Nice.
Usually three-letter agencies. There might be more letters, but yeah. But I would say that a new slogan might need to be taken up of no regulation without representation.
I like that.
So... the bureaucracy, by and large, the bad bureaucracy, has come about by Congress ceding power to the administrative state to essentially make laws that they don't want to be responsible for making. So they give up power in order to look better. The administrative state is unconstitutional, unjust. Again, this is not those things. I would say, by and large, it is, without maybe few exceptions, people could be like, well, there's actually constitutional provision for this. By and large, it's unconstitutional. If we want it to be constitutional, we can make it that way by a constitutional amendment. And because it's going without our consent, it's unjust by and large.
Yeah.
And one of the most dangerous, and it can become one of the most dangerous and soft forms of tyranny, because these people rule, they get their regulations and their rules done by games and circuses.
What does that mean? Explain that.
So that's a term that comes from the Roman Empire. That the emperors could get away with anything as long as they kept the people entertained and fed.
Yeah.
Right? So if you can have all the welfare state and get everybody, free Wi-Fi, whenever we heard that, my gosh, then the people are going to willingly accept the power that these people have because they want the handouts. And that's what becomes dangerous. It's soft because it's nice.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like, you know, if you just give me a nice enough Lego set, I'll let you do whatever you want.
See? Yeah. Some of us are still stuck in Legos.
Some of us are still on the road to serfdom.
Yep. So bureaucracy, by and large, is rule without the people's consent. And that is unjust. That is a direct attack on liberty.
Nice.
So all this to say, I think we've looked at so many examples of oppression, so many examples of how these things, how tyranny has led to the just destruction of human life, the destruction of what God has said is good and right for human flourishing, and how they get to power, and then how they want to become absolute in power. They want to play God. And in that, they become destructive of what God has given us as, this is the way. This is the way that's good and right for mankind to have flourishing in the world. And it's for even non-believers. It's a blessing from God that, and hope that even a non-believer, when you abide by God's ways, mm-hmm. that he'll see God's goodness.
Yeah.
Right? Because
that you'll be blessed in that, because right. it just works.
It works. But if we won't, if we keep rejecting God's ways, you better watch out.
Yeah.
And if we're just, maybe we're not rejecting God's ways, but we're being apathetic. Mm. Watch out. Like, be alert. I think our founding fathers, paraphrase it, they said it best when they said that you have to keep an eternal vigilance on liberty. Mm. And any encroachments against her, you've got to be on guard against it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. That makes sense.
So, wrapping up today, mm-hmm. We've looked at how tyranny happens. Mm-hmm. You know, we've looked at how it is happening in our world, right? And we've discussed, by and large, just the effects, how it could just destroy people, how it brings them down, it breaks the spirit, you know? So, by all this, I hope that we can all see why so many brave men and women, especially during World War II, but not only in America, but in other countries and throughout history. Mm-hmm. I hope we can see that why so many of them have fought and stood against tyranny, and why it is still worth standing against tyranny today. Mm-hmm. By the simple fact of just avoiding the destruction, but also, man, the alternative, the liberty, the goodness that mm-hmm. God has given us, it's worth preserving. It's worth defending against tyrants who yeah. want to usurp God's rule.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know if I can have kind of one just sort of final thought my perspective, and then I'll let, you know, you can kind of close it out. But I think the number one thing, sort of my warning to people against tyranny, is that tyranny always leads to cruelty and oppression, yep. which we talked about from, you know, Friedrich Hayek. That was his definition. But tyranny always leads to cruelty and oppression, which always leads to the devaluation of human life.
Right.
And the devaluation of human life always leads to violence, murder, and sort of just untold horrors enacted upon people created in the image of God.
Right.
And so I would say if that's like, if you have to have any reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to want to be against sort of like tyranny and tyrannical rule, you know, let it be that, mm-hmm. that in its sort of nature, it seeks to, and there's plenty of reasons for that, spiritual and physical, mm-hmm. you know, to devalue human life to the point that it's willing to take it.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I think where it fundamentally gets down to why it's so evil is that right there. Mm-hmm. It is a destruction of life.
Yeah.
Right. And in being a destruction of life, it's an attack on God's image, because it's seeking to destroy God's image bearers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I had a closing quote.
Yep.
That, you know, tying back to why it's still worth standing against. Mm-hmm. This comes from 1320.
Nice.
So, as long as 100 of us remain alive, never will we, on any conditions, be subjected to the lordship of the English. It is in truth not for glory, nor riches, nor honors that we are fighting, but for freedom alone, which no honest man gives up but with life itself. Now, that was in 1320 when the Scottish people had finally gotten their independence from the English. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's pointed. I pray, you know, obviously that we never go to that kind of extremes, mm-hmm. but have a resolve to pay attention, to be on watch, and to stand up and say, no, God has a better way. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
Well, this was a bit longer and a lot, one of our most weighty topics, but we felt like for you, our listeners, that we needed to have this discussion, because mm-hmm. it's not fun, but it needs to be talked about.
For sure.
So thanks for listening. And yeah, we look forward to seeing you guys next time. God bless. Thank you for listening to the Free Man's Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe for more great episodes coming your way soon. For more information and to sign up for exclusive bonus content, you can visit our website, thefreemanspodcast.com. Thanks again for listening, and God bless y'all.